making TV special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Has passed. That's Broken Spindles, a side project from The Faint, with a track called, appropriately enough, Anniversary. Ladies and gentlemen, it's September 11th, 2009, and my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the show and site MediaMonarchy.com, and I've come into the studio a little bit early this morning here at the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, to put together a B-side episode for you. So if you're keeping score, we're calling this episode 139B. And I do these when I know I can't put all the information into one two-hour show. So what we're going to do here is go over everything more or less not 9/11 related, because that's what we're going to do on the upcoming episode 140, and there's so much to discuss. And of course, as I glance at Google News on this 9/11/09 morning, Obama and administration officials pay tribute to 9/11 victims, Obama's first 9/11. But what we want to look at first on MediaMonarchy.com, posted up yesterday, the 9-10 news purge, everything else and after, and this is where we're going to cover everything related to the drug wars, the money wars, history, mystery, media memes, all the latest from our unelected misleaders, the police state, the war whores, but we're going to start it with some of the latest headlines on the swine flu and the impending bio wars. The World Health Organization, WHO, admits to releasing viruses via mock-up vaccines. Now, this is coming from Mercola.com, from Dr. Mercola, M-E-R-C-O-L-A. The document on the WHO website, linked below, linked for you here, states that it's common procedure to release pandemic viruses into the population in order to get a jump ahead of the real pandemic so as to fast-track the vaccine for when it's needed. In Europe, some manufacturers have conducted advanced studies using so-called mock-up vaccines. Mock-up vaccines contain an active ingredient for an influenza virus that hasn't circulated recently in human populations and thus mimics the novelty of a pandemic virus. According to the website, quote, such advanced studies can greatly expedite regulatory approval. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? Rushing the approval of the latest killer drug from Big Pharma. As soon as school began, we immediately saw 2,000 people infected, possibly with H1N1 at Washington University. Is this the beginning, the real beginning of this pandemic? The update to this is that Cornell University in New York also reported an outbreak. So AP has more on Cornell News, AOL News has more on Washington University. And again, we'll just remind you that swine flu was first noted at Fort Dix at a military base in 1976. Speaking of, Defense Department to start H1N1 flu vaccinations. This is coming from a site that we've hit once before, and I've started to note them as a place to find out things about our friends in the military-industrial complex. DVIDSHub.net, Digital Video and Imagery Distribution Systems. Defense Department to start H1N1 flu vaccinations. All military personnel will be vaccinated against the H1N1 flu virus, and the vaccine will be available to all military family members who want it, a DOD health affairs official said on September 1st. The H1N1 vaccination program will begin in early October, said Army Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Wayne Hatchie, Director of Preventive Medicine for DOD. The vaccine, which has been licensed by the FDA, will be mandatory for uniformed personnel. The colonel said, quote, what we want to do is target those people who are at highest risk for transmission. New York, L.A., Boston are setting up swine flu vaccination centers. That's coming from Bloomberg. My home state of West Virginia has now recorded its first swine flu death, this coming from the Martinsburg Journal. A 51-year-old Kanawha County man became West Virginia's first swine flu-related death. And I'm sure that's just the beginning, as we said. The last note on the bio wars is an interesting document where essentially international business machines, IBM, the folks who helped develop the Hollerith punch cards and numbers that automated the Holocaust, IBM and the Holocaust. Someone reposted, and it's from a long URL, so its origin is unknown to me at this point looking at it, but they post up the scans of IBM documents from 2006, essentially predicting a flu pandemic. There is, quote, There is a 100% chance that a pandemic will occur within the next 5 years. During the pandemic, a maximum of 30% of the workforce will be available. It's just business. One note on the drug war, the phony war on drugs. Former U.S. official arrested on cocaine smuggling charges. This coming from Overseas Press, the New Zealand Herald, but it's Dateline Phoenix. A former high-ranking U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent who was stationed in Mexico before retiring in 07 has been arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to smuggle coke into the U.S. Richard Padilla Kramer, C-R-A-M-E-R, Kramer, arrested in his home in Green Valley, Arizona, 40 kilometers south of Tucson, and he's already appeared before a judge. And we already know that they're running it. The Cocaine Importation Agency. A few notes on the new financial world order. And again, new world order used to be a crazy conspiracy. But now it's graced newspaper, magazine headlines around the world, and it's just in your face. From McClatchy, but up on Yahoo News, a year after financial crisis, a new world order emerges. 1 year after the near collapse of the global financial system, this much is clear. The financial world as we knew it is over, and something new is rising from its ashes. Historians will look to September 2008 as a watershed for the U.S. economy. Something new is rising from its ashes. United Nations conference calls for new global currency. That's essentially a one world currency. The United Nations Conference on Trade and Development said in a report published Monday that the U.S. dollar should be replaced as the world's standard reserve currency, giving rise to a new global currency managed by an as-yet-undetermined financial regulatory system. This is coming from Raw Story, but it sources out to Reuters as well as Bloomberg and numerous other places. We've heard this before. They want a one world currency. Wall Street to securitize people's deaths. This is something I can't quite fully get into, but essentially, the New York Times published a pretty creepy article on Saturday, September 5th. The article focuses on Wall Street's new plan to make money. What's so bad about Wall Street making money? Well, the new plan is to buy insurance, is to buy life insurance plans from elderly and sick people for cash. The example that the New York Times gives is someone selling a $1 million policy for a $400,000 payout, but the payout amount would all depend on the seller's life expectancy. These life settlements would then be bundled together to form bonds that can be sold to investors. The investors would start paying for the person's policy from then on. When the person dies, the investors collect on the policy. Apparently, the faster a person dies, the more money the investors can make. However, regardless of whether you die sooner or later, Wall Street firms will profit off fees collected from creating the bonds and facilitating transactions, sort of derivatives, if you will. You could say that Wall Street is planning to securitize people's lives, or deaths, as this case may be. We all know how great this has worked out before with Wall Street and their collateralized debt obligations. The faster you die, the more money Wall Street banksters will make. It makes me choke. Last Friday, five more banks failed. Five banks down in the first week of September. Links to money.cnn.com. We can also hit Bloomberg. Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, and Arizona. Five banks in four states. If you're keeping score, and we have been all year, the number is now 89 banks to fail in 2009. Now it's already a week from these last reports, and we'll see a whole new swath of banks foreclosed on today on this 8th anniversary of 9/11. The last note on the Econo crash coming from the Associated Press. Dateline Boston, funeral sciences benefit from a moribund economy. That's a nice way of essentially saying, in this economy, people are becoming morticians. The faster you die, the more money that someone else can make. One geopolitical note, Germany overturns Nazi treason convictions. This from the Associated Press. Germany's parliament unanimously passed a blanket measure Tuesday overturning Nazi-era verdicts convicting people of treason. This nearly 65 years after the end of World War II. Treason convictions carried the death penalty and were handed down in Nazi Germany for any act deemed harmful to the nation or helpful to the enemy. Under that umbrella, people were convicted of treason for political resistance, aiding Jews, helping prisoners of war, selling products on the black market, and scores of other acts. Quote, by rehabilitating all so-called war traitors, we restore the honor and dignity of a long-forgotten group of victims of the Nazi justice system, end quote, Justice Minister Brigitte Zeitpries said. This is also an important signal for the relatives. On the history mystery note, but yet somehow related, massive ancient wall uncovered in Jerusalem. We can hit the link to CNN. It's made of boulders weighing 4 to 5 tons, estimating to be 3,700 years old. One archaeologist is quoted as saying, I don't know how to do it today without mechanical equipment. But back on our shores, from the News of the Weird file, out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, ancient skeleton found with gun under shed. Construction workers installing support for a new deck at a home outside Boston dug up the concrete floor of a shed and found a skeleton buried there with a gun that appears to be about 100 years old. There are some updates on this. Some of her saying that these aren't human bones. But essentially, a skeleton and a gun was found, and I was kind of surprised that a story that kind of strange and that kind of ripe with imagery, that story wasn't seized on by either side on the phony left-right paradigm. The one side could look at it and say, see, that guy died clutching his gun like a ancient old caveman, and that's old history, and we need to get past that and see, and the Second Amendment is a relic. But on the flip side, you could say, well, see, that's how important it's been all along. From his cold, dead hands, I suppose. A few notes on the world of media memes. An interesting article from the New York Times, one that's quite heartening. From a porch in Montana, low power radio's voice rises. This is out of Montana, and they're covering Scott Johnston. He runs KXZI on his own. And what this article goes into and what we've been hopeful for is that more communities will work on passing laws allowing low-power FM broadcasts. If you're not interfering with NPR and you're not interfering with other local things, and the frequency is free, you should be able to broadcast a couple hundred watts. Can I get an amen? Philip Garrido, the guy behind the recent J.C. Dugard kidnapping and escape, all the disturbing connections around that, and again, I've pointed time and time again to Alex Constantine, who knows what he's talking about and has done his homework for a long, long time when it comes to kidnapping, sex slavery, ritual abuse, perhaps even mind control. Digging into Philip Garrido, pop idol, he has a CD. Dare I hit the link and see what it's called Voices Are Real. And he sang about his fascination with young girls. Earth Liberation Front, the ELF, toppled 2 radio towers near Seattle. Hey, thanks a lot. Good. Excellent work. Supposedly, they were concerned about, quote, We have to weigh our priorities and the local ecosystem in Everett, Washington, along with the local residents. Do not need additional sports news radio station towers that come at the expense of reduced property values and harmful radio waves. So I'm with them on not needing another sports news station. Since when was ELF concerned with reduced property values? A nice little video going into the TV as essentially a Pentagon-designed mind control device. The flicker rates, all of it, is there. That's a video for you. And lastly, on the media memes, GQ magazine censors article about Russian false flag events. Essentially, a new article, I believe it's called The Dark Rise of Putin, Putin's Dark Rise to Power, something like that. They cut it from the Russian edition of GQ. I don't think the article is online yet. I'm not sure. If it is, somebody send it to me. Let's try and find a way to avoid actually buying the magazine and scanning it and getting it up online. But it goes into the strange, to say the very least, circumstances surrounding the Beslan massacre and all those things that Putin, a KGB guy, that's how they roll. And again, that's how all the gangsters roll. An interesting note on 999, we had a hijacking September 9th, 2 days ago. It was a Mexico plane hijacking. It fortunately ended peacefully. More on that from not only the LA Times, but also Lauren Coleman on copycateffect.blogspot.com, going into, again, the numbers game. And now it's time, my friends, to go into the latest shenanigans surrounding the Obamasiah and his apostles of war. Left or right, it doesn't matter. Obama website calls opponents right-wing domestic terrorists. This comes by way of Kurt Nemo. And it links over to one of the organizing pages on, oh, it's Organizing for America. So there's the screenshot. And it says, blah, 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 as we fight back against our own right-wing domestic terrorists who are subverting the American democratic process. On the flip side, from The Guardian, Obama loses the left. Although the smarter folks were never taken in. That's how we need to go after this guy, is attack him from the left. That's his weakest area. We've got more on the strange and creepy indoctrination of a seemingly Obama youth in schools, and there's videos and things of kids singing songs and taking oaths. But fortunately, from GregPalast.com, he had a guest post. A guy named Bill Roney, R-O-N-E-Y, Teacher of the Year out of New York. He essentially calls Obama out for still following George Bush's plan, which this is just one of many ways he's still following the George Bush plan. And the plan before that, and the plan before that. The puppets make no difference. Still following Leave No Child Behind, and the same garbage going on in the disgusting school system. Where's your homework, Mr. President? This then swirls around this big speech, the big hubbub about this September 8th speech that Obama gave that was broadcast in schools. It turned into parents taking their kids at home, and this is indoctrination, and of course the left, they started wig out. I overheard people talking about it in the school, in the store, and parents dub September 8th Keep Your Kids at Home Day. That's from WorldNet Daily. However, from NationalExpositor.com, 42% of parents don't want their children watching Obama speech, but Newt Gingrich says, and there's the video from Raw Replay, that it's a good speech. From the Deutsche Press Agency, Obama school speech, a lesson in political controversy. So you can go down that whole interesting avenue. The Department of Homeland Security wants to recruit Girl Scouts. This all ties in the schools Get them while they're young. There's also, and I just saw this morning from Politico, NEA in Politics Flap. Essentially, the head of the National Endowment for the Arts got essentially demoted over pushing the Obama agenda. The communications director for the National Endowment for the Arts is no longer in his job amid a flap over suggestions he suggested artists work to further President Obama's legislative agenda. I pledge. You remember those videos seeing fools like Demi Moore saying, I pledge myself to Obama. Whatever he says we should get on board for, we're on board for. Because I've fallen for the slickest Madison Avenue propaganda presidential garbage that's ever been foisted upon the American public. But I digress. A video from Laura Bush saying it's unfair to call Obama a socialist. But again, getting more critical from foreign press, from the Telegraph. Obama accused of making depression mistakes. Again, we've seen this before. Economists have hit it. We're making the same mistakes. And it's not due to incompetence. A fortunate note from the New York Times, White House to open visitor logs. So there is a little bit of visibility for you. We've also got then Obama's speech that he gave Wednesday to Congress. So he had the big Tuesday school speech, and that was controversial. And then he had the big Wednesday pep rally for the health scare. We've got the highlights and the bullet points of what is in the plan. We've got the full text of the speech, both posted up thanks to McClatchy. We've got other videos and related things. Obama invoking Ted Kennedy during this address to Congress. But what's getting all the attention and what is fascinating on multiple levels is essentially someone heckling Obama during this speech. He didn't call him a Judas, but he said, "You lie."
Given all the misinformation that's been spread over the past few months, I realize that many Americans have grown nervous about reform. So tonight I want to address some of the key controversies that are still out there. Some of people's concerns have grown out of bogus claims spread by those whose only agenda is to kill reform at any cost. The best example is the claim made not just by radio and cable talk show hosts, but by prominent politicians, that we plan to set up panels of bureaucrats with the power to kill off senior citizens. Now, such a charge would be laughable if it weren't so cynical and irresponsible. It is a lie, plain and simple. There are also those who claim that our reform efforts would ensure illegal immigrants. This too is false. The reforms I'm proposing would not apply to those who are here illegally. It's not true. And one more misunderstanding I want to clear up. Under our plan, no federal dollars will be used to fund abortions, and federal conscience laws will remain in place.
Now, that was a guy named Representative Joe Wilson from South Carolina. So that whole video was there, and I played to give you the full context. Some of the later reportage says, you know, that it wasn't premeditated what he did and yada yada. And other people, of course, have rightly said that maybe we shouldn't be focusing on this guy. However, just the cultural ramifications of heckling the president in Congress is fascinating to me. It's scary because, one, of course, this didn't happen when the previous puppet was lying, or his previous puppet was lying, or the dad of the guy before that guy, and all of that. They are liars. Professional liars. But it also ratchets up this class war, this phony left-right that ultimately they're ratcheting up because they know we'll all fall for it. and they want us to wig out, and they want us to get mad, and they want us to get violent. And they're going to ratchet it up, and this whole shell game and WWF left versus right garbage as we all follow it along and cheer. And we'll start throwing chairs into the ring before long. But the point is, about this, he was saying, you lie. You lie about giving federal insurance benefits to illegals. He's right. But the catch is, in a way, he won't actually give federal insurance benefits to illegals. Because we'll legalize them first. It's on the fast track. Cybercast News Service, CNSNews.com, notes that in the speech, Obama said that his health care reform plan will not ensure illegal immigrants. This, of course, Joe Wilson shouted out, you lie. Wilson apologized, but Obama's statement deserves further scrutiny. It's true that both the House and Senate health care bills, as they are now drafted, would make illegal aliens ineligible for federally funded health care, but Obama has stated as recently as last month at a press conference, link and video for you, in Mexico, that he will seek, quote, comprehensive immigration reform, end quote, legislation that will put illegal aliens on a, quote, pathway to citizenship. We also have the Hillary movie, Hillary the movie, this documentary that's actually now turned into a Supreme Court case, and it all has to do with funding and who can fund what and what's political advertising and yada yada. Consortium News has more, as well as Raw Replay, anti-Hillary movie test legal limits, and Supreme Court on the verge of overturning campaign finance laws. A last couple of notes on these cast of characters. A well-connected cast of characters paid a nice little 999 tribute to the late Walter Cronkite. Obama, Katie Couric, Bill Clinton. So you got the current president, handpicked seemingly by Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's former National Security Advisor. We've got Katie Couric, newscaster for, I believe, CBS. She's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Bill Clinton, former president, Rhodes Scholar, studied under Carol Quigley, author of Tragedy and Hope. They all got together to praise the most amazing, perhaps, Operation Mockingbird newscaster that we've seen, one of the most trusted men in America. He knew how to play the mighty Wurlitzer. But on a completely different note, from BayouBuzz.com, Ron Paul made a rock star appearance at Loyola University. We could have had someone like him. You could have voted for Ron Paul, or Kucinich, or McKinney, or Nader, or even Chuck Baldwin or Bob Barr, for God's sakes. Let's quickly get into the Police State International, and that is essentially when the state does things to us. Mock hijacks play out over Canada and U.S., this coming from the UPI. And this ties in with a lot of strange drills that we're about to run down quickly. Canada to set off bombs in Washington. Now, I realize that first link that I mentioned, mock hijacks play out over Canada and U.S., that's a flashback link to June of 2002, but that sets the table for what we're talking about right now. Again, from UPI, September 4th, 2009. The Canadian government will set off several fake bombs at its Washington embassy compound this month to demonstrate its NATO combat role in Afghanistan. The embassy is hosting a two-day conference beginning September 23rd and has arranged for a mock Afghan village to be built and manned by Afghan actors as Hollywood-style mock bombs explode. This is going to happen in the District of Criminals. Canada to stage mock Afghan attack in Washington. More from the Globe and Mail. We've also got a disaster exercise to take place September 30th in Michigan. We've got the Air Force flying Red Flag Alaska 09. That's October 1st through the 16th. 14 countries are going to participate in a mass casualty drill that has a strange name, MEDCEUR 2009, and that's MEDCEUR, or MEDCEUR. Strange military health drills. We have the 69th Bomb Squadron reactivating at Minot Air Force Base, the home of all the strange activities and nukes that fly across the country and guards that fall asleep and missile bodies that live in ditches and fuses mistakenly sent to Taiwan. These guys are flying nukes again. So just so you know, just so you feel safe and you think, America, fuck yeah. Homeland Security begins hoarding personal data. A video and story from Russia today. If you're leaving or coming back in, they'll probably pretty much just copy everything on your devices. And one last note, again, on 9/9/9, the ground was broken on a $3.5 billion Homeland Security complex. That leads us right into the last few headlines on this massive news purge. A few notes on the war whores. U.S. expands arms sales, ranking as top weapons supplier. This from the Deutsche Press Agency. The United States not only increased its arms sales by nearly 50% last year, but its share of world weapons sales also rose to more than two-thirds despite that pesky global economic downturn. The U.S. expanded its ranking as the top weapons supplier with sales of $37.8 billion last year, or 68% of the world total, up from $25.5 billion in 2007. Reports linked to New York Times, reports from the Congressional Research Service, and other think tanks. And again, this isn't some crazy hidden conspiracy. We arm the world. And by we, I mean the international banksters and conglomerates that have run this and most other countries for quite some time. So let's not always make the mistake of saying, you know, us, we did it. Our new commander-in-chief certainly could speak out about something like this, but well, but we note from Little Alex in Wonderland, small blog over on WordPress, littlealexinwonderland.wordpress.com, Robert Gates, do you remember he was the head of the Defense Department under that evil George Bush? Well, he's still currently the head of the military under our new savior. The agenda rolls forward. Gates is open to more troops in the Afghan surge. Of course he is. The mad scientists behind the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, DARPA seeks to tap water's power potential. Potential to do what? Fuel the war machine. That's, of course, from Danger Room. The last note coming from Examiner.com. Dateline, Morgantown, West Virginia. Lindy England sues biographer over book deal. Former Army reservist Lindy England, who tells her side of the Abu Ghraib prisoner abuse scandal in a new book, is now suing her biographer over their business dealings. She claims Gary Winkler seized control of what was intended to be a shared copyright by resigning from the West Virginia company set up to handle finances and forming his own Virginia-based publishing company. I have nothing else to say about that. Let's shift gears quickly and look at a couple of the sister websites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. First, let's look at foodworldorder.com in a story from Reuters. Kraft attempts buyout of Cadbury Schweppes for $16.5 billion.
Kraft Foods is in talks to arrange for $8 billion in financing for its bid to buy Cadbury. That's according to two people familiar with the matter. They say Citigroup and Deutsche Bank are working to set up the debt financing. So the $8 billion would cover about half of Kraft's $16 billion offer for Cadbury. Kraft's initial offer rejected by Cadbury.
Just imagine a Bert Cadbury's Dairy Milk chocolate crumbled into feathery chocolatey flakes and caught in a lovely flaky bar.
In terms of great British brand names, Cadbury's is probably among the best of the lot. It dates back to 1824 and has survived two world wars and umpteen recessions in between. It survived partly because it's so good at what it does. There's no doubt that Cadbury would represent a huge price for Kraft. It's the world's second biggest confectionery company, and more importantly, it has cleaned itself up substantially. There's no doubt that Kraft has thought carefully about this bid. Cadbury's shareholder register is now full of American investors who bought shares during the last few years. They will have no problem with accepting part cash and part shares, which despite being listed in the United States are highly liquid and easily tradable, and therefore a reasonably attractive proposition for many Cadbury shareholders. If Cadbury's does fall into foreign hands, there will be many that mourn the loss of another great global brand which is British-owned passing into foreign ownership. However, all is not lost. There are still a number of British companies out there owning a number of huge global brands. Look no further than Vodafone, for example, in the mobile phone space. In terms of consumer goods, Unilever owns some of the world's biggest names in ice cream, including Magnum and Ben & Jerry's, whilst in drinks, Diageo owns nearly all of the world's top branded spirits, ranging from Smirnoff in vodka to Gordon's in gin to Johnnie Walker in Scotch whisky and Captain Morgan in rum. So even if Cadbury's does go the way that many other British companies have gone in recent years, there will at least still be one British flag carrier out there owning top names.
So yes, essentially all your favorite little snacks and comfort foods are owned by heartless multinational corporations that don't give a shit about you. So we heard the reference in the first part of that clip to Deutsche Bank being involved, but returning to the Reuters article, where we note there's also a chance of counter bidders, most likely Hershey and Switzerland's Nestle. Some analysts say they could make a joint offer for Cadbury, but then split the business to get in around any of those pesky antitrust concerns. Remember, we used to actually go after monopolies. That used to actually be a huge thing in the early part of the 20th century. We don't worry about those pesky relics anymore. But I digress. Hershey is being advised by U.S. bank J.P. Morgan on a possible strategy regarding Cadbury. Kraft attempts buyout of Cadbury for $16.5 billion. That is on foodworldorder.com. Now let's jump over to the other sister site, cyberspacewar.com. We've got several things to go over, but first, the prep. And this is essentially what I'm going to try and do with cyberspacewar.com, is go over how we're being prepped on multiple levels for something to happen in the cyber world or in the space world or something connected to all of them. There's something called an electromagnetic pulse. And it could essentially destroy every bit of electronics we've got, and you've got, and they've got. They're starting to beat the war drums and starting to get this idea out there, putting the meme out there. This is EMP prep. An E-bomb doomsday conference started Wednesday, 999. This coming from Danger Room. It'll fry pacemakers, destroy iPhones, turn laptops into useless paperweights. It's the scariest thing most people outside of Washington have never heard of. Electromagnetic pulse weapons. You can learn all about it at the new Impact Conference, E-M-P-A-C-T, going on right now in Niagara Falls, New York. This Danger Room article goes a bit into detail. Perhaps we don't really have the time to do it right now, but what really puts it, I think, all into perspective is that the organizers of the conference, Impact America Incorporated, are trying to change the popular perception of EMP with this conference, and they're trying to do it with crazy Armageddon-like videos like this.
Oh, God. Mr. President, we have a national emergency.
A nuclear weapon atop a ballistic missile has been launched from a freighter off the coast of the United States. The weapon is not designed to kill Americans, at least not directly and right away. Instead, it is meant to unleash EMP, an electromagnetic pulse that destroys electronic devices and power grids. As it detonates 300 miles above the United States, a single explosion unleashes electronic waves a million times more powerful than any radio signal on Earth. In the United States, nearly all computers fail. Telecommunications end. Transportation comes to a halt. The stock market's crippled. Bank accounts disappear. Federal officials warn EMP could paralyze America, instantly returning our country to a pre-industrial age. And they say we are utterly unprepared for it.
But how much of our lives are run on electricity?
That's right.
Just about everything, right?
Yeah, if you think about the effect of an electromagnetic pulse, it would be a devastating impact. Not only would the power grid be out, it would be out for probably months, but every piece of electronics that we use, from pacemakers to phones to cars to gasoline pumps to water pumps, would all be fried.
Well, that's about everything, huh?
Yeah.
It'll be enforced in an expert in what's called an electromagnetic pulse.
An EMP weapon, meaning a small nuclear bomb, detonated above the center of the United States, would literally take down the entire power grid of this country.
Wow.
Flooding us back 300 to 400 years.
That is remarkable.
Lights are out in a huge and history-making blackout.
Some people are without water and...
What's going on?
In August 2003, when the power shut off along the east coast of America and Canada, unprecedented chaos broke out.
It'll be okay, honey. It'll be all right.
Major cities like New York were brought to a standstill. Thousands were trapped in subway tunnels, while road traffic became instantly gridlocked. But things could have been much worse. Vehicles may have been at a standstill, but at least they were. Mobile phones and police radios weren't affected. Once the power came back on, things quickly returned to normal. An EMP attack would make these events almost seem trivial.
They had a commission that put reports out on this years ago that projected 90% of all Americans could be dead within a year after such an attack.
What are we doing, or what are we working on to prevent it?
Nothing.
Not a thing, even though the warning went out for years.
Electromagnetic pulse. They're prepping you for it. They're prepping you for the cyberspace war. As an interesting side note, and this still coming from Danger Room on this report about the E-Bomb Doomsday Conference, the conspiracy-plagued High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, or HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, the radar array in Alaska, has been proposed as a facility that could be used to research ways to scrub the upper atmosphere, thus mitigating the effects of an EMP weapon. The last posting on cyberspacewar.com, a quick rundown, DEFCON 910 posted up yesterday on September 10th, Czars, satellites, Da Vinci, and Anonymous. Obama now close to appointing this vaunted new cybersecurity chief. According to ComputerWorld.com, as well as Reuters, it looks like it might be a guy named Frank Kramer, an assistant defense secretary under President Bill Clinton. Again, we note that the real cyber attack is this power grab by Obama's White House. The Cyber Security Act of 2009. They want to give the controls, even more controls, to the decider-in-chief. Senate Bill 773 would give the president the authority to declare a quote-unquote cyber emergency and close down the internet by disconnecting users. But that doesn't stop MSNBC from still leading the cry that we need a cyber czar now. So, of course, when something happens, hack attack, punch in the Facebook, we can say, see, we need this more power. We were talking about it, and you guys didn't listen because you're incompetent. Theories have emerged on a secret satellite launch. Apparently, there was a strange satellite launch September 8th again to Danger Room. No one in government is taking credit for a secret payload launched out of Cape Canaveral on September 8th, but helping to provide clues to the mystery payload are amateur sky watchers who believe the mission is designed to address a coverage gap created by delays in other big-ticket military satellite programs that coming from Space Flight Now. Lockheed Martin has confirmed that its spacecraft called Pan was launched atop an Atlas V, but the company isn't providing much in the way of details. There's a strange story surrounding the Da Vinci Code and Matt Lauer and Malware Online and the upcoming book from Dan Brown. Da Vinci Code fans targeted by real international conspiracy. We're not going to get into that. The last thing we're going to note on cyberspacewar.com is that Anonymous, that loose collective of online bandits who quite successfully in the last year or so fought an info war against Scientology, they're now declaring war on Australia over their internet filtering. That is also from Threat Level. So now we reach the last story, the last post on this B-side, 139 of MediaMonarchy.com. This was one of the things that I couldn't get to last week, but it all works out. It all plays out well. Activist releases archive of suppressed news video. This coming from CorbettReport.com. In a move sure to send shockwaves through the online activist community, Jonathan Elanoff, activist, researcher, and the filmmaker behind the Core of Corruption documentary series, CoreofCorruption.com, he has released a video archive of, I believe currently, 153 network news broadcasts detailing controversial and suppressed stories. The archive, compiled over a period of several years, features actual network news coverage of the Trilateral Commission, the shadow government that went into operation on 9/11, the Bohemian Grove, and numerous other topics that the nightly news almost never mentions. Many of these videos are being released online for the first time. I have used this amazing archive of mainstream news sources, coupled with the amazing archive at historycommons.org, to go into what we're going to go into on episode 140, on the 8th anniversary of 9/11. But it's not just 9/11 videos in this complete news archive from coreofcorruption.com. It touches so many other things. So many other things. The anthrax attacks, Watergate issues, bank scandals. But let's just pull one clip, and I was going to play this one for you last week, and it's important enough not to skip. Iran-Contra CIA drug running in MENA, Arkansas.
A civil war in Central America, drug smuggling in Arkansas, President Ronald Reagan and President Bill Clinton, the subject of tonight's Eye on America. First, a little background. In the early 80s, a war was underway for control of Nicaragua. On one side, the ruling Marxist regime, the Sandinistas. On the other side, rebel forces, the Contras, labeled by the Reagan administration as pro-democracy freedom fighters. A base of support for the Contra movement, remote western Arkansas. Correspondent Bill Plant has been investigating for tonight's Eye on America.
1983, Ronald Reagan was president, Bill Clinton was governor, and little MENA, Arkansas changed from a quiet town to a center for drug smuggling and reported Contra support activity. In the middle of it all, this man, admitted dope smuggler Barry Seals.
He started doing business with the Ochoa family in Colombia, hauling his dope.
Arkansas State Trooper Russell Welch investigated Seals' organization.
Each trip would have 250 to 350 pounds of cocaine. He stated that he made $1 million in one trip alone.
Seal built this hangar at Rich Mountain Aviation at the MENA airport for his high-tech smuggling planes, used to fly guns to the Contras and more than 20 tons of cocaine into the U.S. over 3.5 years. former IRS agent William Duncan traced some of Seale's drug profits laundered through MENA banks.
We had direct testimony from people who were involved in a money laundering operation. We had testimony from people at banks who observed the transactions.
And Barry Seale had another agenda. Pilot Terry Reed claims Seale hired him in 1983 to train Contra pilots at this remote airstrip north of MENA.
I was involved in the flight training aspects of upgrading Nicaraguan freedom fighters to make them capable of flying combat aircraft.
The airstrip was built by Seale's organization and also reportedly used to train Contra ground troops. In 1984, Seale was arrested for smuggling and was turned by the Drug Enforcement Administration into an informant and smuggler for the government. With help from both Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North and the CIA, Seale pulled off a spectacular drug sting. He flew his own C-123 to Nicaragua, where he took these pictures of Sandinistas helping load Colombian cocaine onto his plane. After the sting, Seale flew the C-123 to the MENA airport, where it sat for a year. It was later shot down over Nicaragua, filled with guns for the Contras. By late 1985, Agent Duncan had gathered substantial evidence of alleged money laundering against Seale's associates Fred Hampton and Joe Evans of Rich Mountain Aviation.
What happened when you tried to make this case before a grand jury?
I was never asked to present the evidence to a grand jury, ever.
The evidence was in this 24-count draft indictment prepared for the federal grand jury in January of 1986, but the grand jury never saw it.
The United States Department of Justice did not pursue the cases, did not present the evidence of money laundering to the grand jury.
Former U.S. Attorney Mike Fitzhugh, who handled the MENA cases, says that was because Agent Duncan asked for a delay.
I consented to his request that the matter not be presented at the grand jury session meeting in January of 86.
Agent Duncan says he made no such request.
That is absolutely false.
An FBI internal memo from early February 1986, obtained by CBS News, says Fitzhugh was withholding presentation of the indictment. But there is no mention of a request from IRS agent Duncan for a delay.
I would have been the last person in the world to have tried to delay evidence going to the grand jury.
We asked Attorney Fitzhugh if he was told to delay the indictment by the Reagan Justice Department.
There was not any type of pressure or influence put on me or anyone in my office that I'm aware of.
For two more years, Trooper Welch watched as Fitzhugh's federal grand jury failed to return indictments in the MENA cases.
It was a slow realization over a period of time that this isn't like any other case. It's not going anywhere. We're wasting our time.
By 1988, Trooper Welch and Agent Duncan had given up on the Reagan Justice Department, but not on their investigation. They had hopes that the state of Arkansas could impanel a grand jury to hear evidence of money laundering, drug smuggling, and conspiracy. They went directly to then-Governor Bill Clinton.
And of course, the story goes deeper and deeper and deeper. That is a CBS News broadcast from March 25th, 1994, and it's just one of the 153 mainstream news accounts of suppressed news released thanks to coreofcorruption.com. I would suggest also checking out a book called Barry and the Boys by Daniel Hopsicker, and also a book called Compromised. I believe the subtitle is something like Bush, Clinton, CIA, and drug running, and that's by Terry Reed. That's going to do it for this B-side episode 139 of MediaMonarchy.com. We keep Google News open for a reason, to see breaking news when it happens. Anti-abortion activist gunned down outside Michigan High School. This from just about an hour ago. On this September 11th, 2009 morning, a well-known anti-abortion activist was shot multiple times and killed Friday morning in front of a Michigan high school, and another man was shot and killed just miles away in what police are investigating as related incidents. Michigan State Police have taken a suspect into custody but have not released the name of the victim. This coming from the Flint Journal. The school was placed, of course, on immediate lockdown, though no students were injured or involved in the shooting. So, this report seems to say that an anti-abortion activist was murdered. And it doesn't seem to be that it was by the cops in some kind of confrontation. I would speculate that this looks like some sort of assassin from the left. So are we going to see the left take up arms against anti-abortionists? Again, ratcheting up the class war, race war, phony left-right paradigm. Again, ultimately, the guys towards the top of the pyramid, they're all eugenicists. They don't give a shit about abortion. They want you to fight about it. They want you to fight about whether or not you may get to do it or may not get to do it. But ultimately, they want you to do it. Because you don't have the bloodline. I can't say anything else, my friends, other than stay tuned and stay subscribed to MediaMonarchy.com. We have episode 140 of Media Monarchy coming up, completely going over the bigger, bigger picture of 9/11. So all I'll say, my friends, is this has been 139B of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
Tall remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight. Yep.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.